from ABC News Radio, KMET 1490 in Southern California. This is Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with your host, Tyler Jorgensen.
Welcome out to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio. I am your host, as always, Tyler Jorgensen. And with us today is Nancy May, who is one of the top 10 strategic governance experts and the CEO of the Board Bench Companies. Welcome out to the show, Nancy.
Thanks, Tyler. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're going to talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey, a little bit about what Board Bench does, and about the importance of having a good board for your company, right? So tell us a little bit about what Board Bench is and what you guys do.
So we work with public and private companies to help them with board governance, making sure their boards are up to snuff and that they have the right directors in place and seat for the right reason, and evaluations, and making sure that everybody's working at top level. On the other side, we also work with individuals who want to get on boards and are kind of clueless on how to do that. And believe it or not, there are an awful lot of people who are exceptional executives that are good at what they do, but when they reach that top level, they don't know how to get into the boardroom. That's part of what we do. We know the insides and the outsides of both sides.
Awesome. So let's unpack that a little bit. You've got a few different parts of what you do. So in order for our listeners to really understand that, not everyone understands what a board of directors is and how important it is for a company. Mm-hmm. So just for the sake of our conversation, where most of our listeners are small business owners, entrepreneurs, getting started, they're in that 1 to 40 people, maybe getting to that 100 employee range. What is a board of directors, and why is it important for a smaller to mid-sized company to have one?
Oh, geez. A board of directors is, depending upon the size you are and what you're doing, if you're a smaller company and starting out, a board of directors can be a team, or I'll call it a group of individuals and experts that you go to for guidance and support when you get into trouble, where you need introductions to good vendors, to clients, just to help you strategically work through the challenges. If you have hiring issues, you have legal issues, whatever the case may be, It's a group of individuals that you put together are your go-to guys, I'll call them.
Sure.
As you grow larger, typically, especially if you have outside investors and money coming in, you may have some of your investors on your board, which creates another set of challenges in some case, but they are there to guide you. You grow big, they grow big, and everybody's happy in the end.
Awesome. So what's the main difference? I mean, I've heard the term board of directors, and I also hear board of advisors.
Right.
I think there's some legal differences. What's the difference between
them? There is. So a board of advisors typically does not have a fiduciary responsibility. So they do not have a responsibility to make sure that you are profitable, that if there's a liability issue, that they have some connection to you in any way, shape, or form. A board of directors typically reports to an outside body of investors. That's where they say board of advisors or board of directors in a public company. It's your shareholders. It's everybody else that is benefiting in some way, shape, or form financially from the institution as well, other than customers.
Definitely. And so from a corporate org chart standpoint, usually people think that the CEO is at the top. But the CEO's boss is usually the board of directors, right?
You got it. You got it. If it's playing right.
Yeah. And then the board of directors, their duty is to the shareholders at large, which is either a large amount of public shareholders or a small amount of private investors, their shareholders, right?
Correct. The other thing that a board really should be responsible for, too, is to really look at ultimately what's the sustainability of the business. You want to make sure that company continues to work and operate at a profitable level. That includes customers, you know, get what they need, then there's no issues, that vendors are good vendors and don't create problems, that any kind of body that touches the institution in any way, shape, or form works to make sure that they're strong and healthy institution.
Yeah, I tend to remind people that sometimes people think that a CEO is autonomous, right? And they can do whatever they want. I was like, well, their job is to execute the will of the board, right? That's what they actually, they're just the number one manager. You know, some of them will have based on the board, they'll have different amounts of freedom. But they have, the board is really the core team of strategists and the core team of, you know, planners. And like you said, making sure that they're making sure that they can at least paint the direction of the company as a large thing. Or am I off there?
Yeah, the board of directors is not the group of individuals that creating the strategy for the company.
Okay.
It's the senior management team that creates that, the CEO and his or her team that build the strategy for the institution or the organization, because they're in the thick of it day in and day out.
But they'd be building the strategy based on what the goals and the direction that the board is saying we want to go.
Right. The direction, the board will say, we want you to go generally over here. They understand, hopefully they understand the business. That's not true of all boards. Not every board really understands who the customer is. You'd be surprised how often I have heard a board member say, you know, I just joined this company and I didn't realize how important it was that they had these customers. Kind of shocking, but it does happen.
Sure. Okay. And so I think we have a general understanding of what the purpose of a board is and where they fit into the system. So how does your company come in on the company side, on the board's level side, and make sure that those boards are functioning?
So there's something called a board evaluation, and a board evaluation really does sort of an inside, outside, upside down review of how the board is functioning. Are committees structurally proper, properly structured based on how the company is set up, the board committees that are set up? What is the charter of the company and the board? How does that work? Is everybody in the board communicating properly? Just because one committee is over here and another committee, let's say a governance committee is on one side and a finance or a risk committee is on another, and they don't talk to one another, there's a problem there.
Right.
So, for example, a governance committee may be dealing with compensation, and you may have a separate compensation committee as well, but typically small companies don't have that. And if the finance committee doesn't understand, or the finance committee doesn't understand what's going on from a financial perspective on the remuneration of the executives, then you got a big gaping hole.
Gotcha.
If there's some discord that's going on, so you could find out you have the chairman of the board, let's say, for example, who feels like they're the 800-pound gorilla and can boss around anybody, probably a problem.
Right.
If they're too old, not that age is an issue of incompetency, but if they're too old and they fall asleep at the table, got a problem.
Yeah.
If they don't understand the business and they don't show up on time and they don't read the materials and they don't ask questions and they don't challenge the management team, you got a problem. Now, these are generalities, but
sure. Understood. But you guys look for and identify those problems, and then do you make suggestions on how to improve and fix?
We do make recommendations. You know, here's an issue, here are some things, let's talk about it. You also want to make sure that the board and the senior management team have a good working relationship, because the CFO reports into the finance committee, typically not directly to the CEO, as in the board particular situation. If there's an issue of fraud or misunderstanding that's going on in the company, you want to make sure that there's a way for that to be reported up to the board. There are a number of intricacies that go on in a board, especially. They don't meet every day. It's not they're not there in the company every day. They're there several times a year. That's it.
Yeah. And that's another thing a lot of people don't realize, is how big of an impact a board can have, but how little the daily involvement is, right?
Correct. You know, the old adage is, you know, nose in, fingers out. But in a younger company, a board can be a huge asset. And not there from a day-to-day perspective, but really just do some heavy lifting when necessary in some cases. And
yeah.
So it's good.
Generally well-connected and experts in their niche. And so they can create big impact with a lower amount of involvement than, you know.
You hope. Yeah,
that's the goal.
They're good.
Right? An ideal situation. So this is a really cool company that you've started. You have multi-prongs to it. How did you get into, you know, what made you start Boardbench, and how did you get into this?
Well, my career was in corporate early on, and I started in the semiconductor industry in the online world, which now today has evolved to the Internet of Things. And you and I talked earlier about the early days of DOS. I don't want to age either one of us, but for the rest of the world who might not know what DOS stands for, disk operating system, it was the other system that Apple didn't make. But I had gone through the corporate world and decided, was unhappy in a corporate job that I had taken, and decided that maybe it was time to try something on my own. I'd grown up in an entrepreneurial family. My dad had a manufacturing operation, and I watched very closely over my youth what he had done, and I was always fascinated. Family vacations were his conventions, and our customers were, you know, Aunt Sally and Uncle Saul. So I knew, you know, that's what I understood of the entrepreneurial world. But I went out on my own and didn't know how to make a sale. I'd always been part of a management team. I was a sales team. But I learned from Dad and said, well, you know, sales was always a conversation. It was about a relationship. And that's what I did. And one of my first customers I did strategy work early on. One of my first customers was one of the largest chemical companies in the world.
Wow.
And it was, I want to say it was a fluke. It was fascinating because the gal who I called on called me 2 days later and says, well, do you not want to work with us? And I said, well, I was going to give you like a week and politely call you back in a week so we could see if there was an opportunity to work together. She goes, no, I thought we were okay the minute you left. So I didn't know.
Yeah, that's funny.
So that's how I started in business for myself. That wasn't the board bench.
Okay, and so how did that evolve into this? And what made you realize there was a need in the marketplace for this type of company?
Well, my clients brought me into this. They started to say, listen, you know, what you're doing here at this top level with us and talking to some of the CEOs that we worked with, they said, you think differently. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the information that you're sharing with us could be very beneficial in our boardroom. This is 15 odd years ago.
Sure.
And could you help us? And I thought, boardroom, yeah, let's put on my research hat and got a couple of, you know, my folks together, and we said, how do we tackle this? And that's exactly what we did. So we dove in, you know, head first into the whole governance environment, and it was fascinating. It's a different set of complexities, yet there are a lot of the same challenges.
Yeah.
So my clients brought me into it. I didn't go into it myself.
So literally the marketplace called for you.
Correct.
Said, you need this service and you seem like you'd provide it. And then you built a business around that.
Correct. I was not a lawyer and I was not an accountant. I was a strategy and business person. I brought a different perspective into things that their outside, councils brought.
We're already doing. Very cool. And so part of what you do and what Boardbench provides is the coaching and the help for people to get on a board. So in the simplest way I can ask, how do I get on a board?
Oh dear, that's a long conversation.
Well, let's bullet point it up a little bit for the audience.
Sure. Well, the first thing you really have to do is make sure, the most important thing you need to do to start with is, do you really want to be on a board? Do you understand what the responsibilities are? That includes not-for-profit, private, and public. Then there are fund boards. There are a variety of different kinds of boards that are out there. But if you look at the three primary distinctions that most people think of as not-for-profit, public, private, and public boards. And then you also have family boards, which is family companies, which is a whole nother set of issues. But not-for-profit boards in general are, I'll say generally fairly easy to get on. Providing you have a check in hand. Now, I don't want to insult any non-for-profits out there who might not necessarily think that way, but a non-for-profit board, typically they look to the board for business and strategic guidance, but they also look at for fundraising. You know, who has the money? If you don't have it, you can't write the check, can you get it for us? So opening doors in different ways and serving as an advocate for the institution.
So on the NPO side, a lot of it is, if you're qualified, can you pay to play?
Correct. Okay. And in some cases, they don't really care if you're even qualified. How big is your check? I've seen that before. It's frightening.
A few of the people I've met, it makes more sense now.
Yeah, it's frightening because then it just becomes a burden to everybody else on the board, especially if they're showing up and they're active.
Yep.
So that's a not-for-profit. On the for-profit side, whether they public or private, the first thing you need to do as a candidate is really make sure that you are, I call it, packaged properly. Does your bio and your resume truly describe what you've done, what value you bring to the institutions that you want to serve? And quite frankly, I counsel people, say, I want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly. You don't necessarily go out there with the ugly on your sleeve, so to speak. Right. But I also want to know how high, I just really say is how high you can jump and how far you can run. I want to quantify, I want to see the results, what you've done, what are the issues that you've, the sticky wickets that you've dealt with, and how do you deal with it? And then it's, you know, how you position all the material, both on your bio and your resume. And I'm working right now with a gal, a very large, came out of a Fortune 500 company, global company. And she's gone from a general bio and resume that you would get a job to now what I call a board bio and resume. And she's like, it's night and day. It's changed her mindset. It's
the way that she's preparing the resume is just,
and just even thinking about herself as a leader in a different perspective. So it's really transformational. Both the men and the women that I've worked with over the years in this particular space, we don't write it for them. Coach them through the process so that they have full ownership and have a complete understanding on how to describe themselves, not just what somebody's written for them.
Yeah. So the first thing you said is that you have to ask yourself,
packaging,
if you really want to be on the board, right? If that's really something.
Yeah.
What would you say are the reasons someone shouldn't be?
Oh, if it's all about them and it's pure ego, there's a lot of ego out there. I've heard the craziest things out why people want to get on boards from, geez, I just want to supplement my retirement for travel so I don't have to dip into that, to, well, this is my retirement plan. If I can get four or five boards and I can make this amount of money and then therefore I don't have to worry about ever making another dime. Not true. You can have a tax liability and no income actually coming in if you were a director. It does happen.
There's a risk there that some people may not have realized.
There's a huge risk. There's a huge risk. It's, you know, the old adage is not if you're going to be sued, it's when you're going to be sued.
Right. And at the board of directors, that's where the buck stops, right?
Well, there is something called D&O, directors and owners insurance. Mm-hmm. But there, you know, you've got new different ways to break companies today. Look at the whole cyber environment that we didn't have or didn't even consider. I mean, there was certainly breaches back in the early days when you and I first got involved in the Internet of Things, but it was not what it is today, and it was not considered as much of a liability as for a consumer and a business. I mean, look at, was it Cambridge Analytica? They're closed. They actually shut the business down. That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's diving into, you know, people getting on the board. So one of the first things you do is ask them if that's really what they want to do. Help them understand that. Yeah. And then you also go through and say, okay, let's start packaging you correctly. Your
correct.
And your resume and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What's usually the next step for them?
So the next step is really understanding which industries make sense for your background. So if you've been in, let's say, the automotive industry and you're the CEO of, well, that's a bad example because it's a big company, and let's say the CEO of Ford, almost anybody would want that.
Yeah, you could get on any board.
You could get on a lot. But if, let's say, you're the CEO or the CFO of a mid-tier automotive parts manufacturer that has revenues of about, let's say, $600 million, understanding that your niche may not just only be automotive, but it's manufacturing, it's different kinds. It could be lean manufacturing in any kind of industry, if in fact you've gone through that process.
Right.
It could be a company that's going through severe union issues, but still in a manufacturing and product type of space, probably not a service business because you've been in a hard good business. So understanding the multitude of different types of industries where you can add value and what that means is the next sort of step.
And then do you guys actually help then at that point, when someone's gone through those exercises, help them identify potential boards, help them identify like how to outreach, or is that point they need to, you know, start hunting?
We build a strategy. So, you know, who is your network? What's going on in the network? How does it work? Everybody's map is different. and how they think about the map and where the opportunities are critical. That includes, you know, how do you do your research? What are the tips and the tricks and the tools that go on? Who do you have the conversations with? How do you deal with other recruiters? When are you becoming a pain in the ass to somebody or not? How are you marketing yourself to other individuals? When is the conversation abusive from your perspective, from your side? Well, you may not think so, but it may be, I'll call it abusive on the other side, and you'll be ignored. To how do you really open a door so there's an opportunity of trust that's built there and value? And it's a sales job. Yeah. It's a marketing and sales job. It's a strategy, marketing and sales job. And people don't do that other than the point in their lives when they're changing their jobs. And typically they do it badly.
Yep. Yeah, because that's usually not their core job, right? Like salespeople might understand that, or marketers might understand it, but an operations person or a manager may not understand that, hey, if you want a new job or if you want to transition in your career, you've got to now learn how to sell yourself.
Well, and it's interesting, the amount of fear, both male and female, is significant, because for the first time now, you don't have a big brand name behind you. It's you. It's very personal. And I was talking to somebody yesterday, and we went through the whole process and just going through what does that take? What are the psychological barriers that you get over? And the tricks, and so the tips and tricks to get around some of those, they were floored. And I did it the other day with the CEO of a major global company who had been a client on the board side. And I said, so when was the last time you sold yourself? And he said, 25, 30 years ago. And they had a bio and a resume that was weak at best.
Yeah. Just because it hadn't been updated, not because it didn't exist, right? Like it just wasn't put to paper. You know, they have 25 years of outdated resume, right?
Outdated would have been a compliment for this role, I have to say.
But that's what I mean. I mean, it wasn't that they hadn't done a ton of things in 25 years.
Oh, absolutely.
It just didn't exist. They hadn't put that down into a format that could be sold or shared.
And people forget what they've done over the course of a lifetime.
For sure.
And you don't document, which is, you know, which quite frankly is okay. But you really want to know what are sort of the big, hairy, audacious things that you've gone through, you know, the BHAG goals that they talk about. And what did it mean to a company? What did it mean to you? So that when you have that discussion, you really know how to peel away the onion and create a story.
Yeah.
Because this story is a sales hook in many ways, shapes, or form.
So you've recently launched a podcast called Boardrooms Best.
That's right.
About challenging people to lead and foster their best, you know, and grow, right? So tell me a little bit about the podcast and what you're hoping to do with that.
Oh, the podcast was sort of a pipe dream. And I had a friend who said, well, let me get you started. And he took his technician and set me up, showed me what to do. So we went and bought all the equipment and I started recording and said, all right, you know, I kind of like jumped in, there I go. And it's been a lot of fun. We focus on really challenging issues that are happening in the boardroom. My first guest was Jack Devine, who is the interim head of the CIA. And we talked about due diligence and what happens when boards don't do their due diligence properly, not just through acquisitions, but it also could be executive due diligence. And you find out that things are sort of run amok.
Sure.
And what that can mean and how that can snap back and hurt somebody. I just completed a podcast, which is on the cutting room floor, as they say, in Radio Land,
right.
With Keith Kroc, who is the chairman and CEO of DocuSign, that just went public last week.
Very cool.
And we did that recording actually the day, that evening before they went public, which was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's
cool. I've done a podcast with Karen Barsa, who's been on a number of public company boards and has been dealing with activists in the course of her career and knows how to do that. We've got a huge lineup. I'm dealing with, I've got another one that will be coming out shortly with a fellow who's a venture capital. We're dealing with young companies and how CEOs can lose control of their company through the investor rounds. And what does that mean? A good entrepreneur wants to hang on to their business. They don't want to lose it because they've made dumb mistakes that could have been avoided, whether they have a good board or not. It can happen.
So you can find your, I know that you're on iTunes at Boardrooms Best by Nancy May, and so you
Spotify can, and
Spotify and all those places.
Yeah.
So I always say though that when we become an entrepreneur, when we're doing running a business, so when you're running, you know, boardbench.com, and when you're doing all of that, it's here to create a lifestyle for us. And I always like to remember the human element of why we do all of this. Sure. And so I always ask, like, what's one major personal item on your bucket list that you're going to accomplish in the next 12 months?
Ooh. Well, I'm going to put out more podcasts, and in the next 12 months, I hadn't actually thought about that from the human perspective.
Yeah. I like to shake it up a little bit.
Yeah. So we're going to do more podcasts, and I'd like to try and get into some blogging. So where we can do some more visual kind of work, and quite frankly, do more work at a much higher level than we are now. We're not doing at a high level now. I mean, we've dealt with some of the largest financial institutions in the world, down to some younger biotech companies.
Right.
And it's been a very exciting ride, and I like to light a fire and jump over it.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you got really good momentum on a ton of great things happening. I encourage my listeners out there to check out Nancy May's website at boardbench.com. And check out her podcast on iTunes and all those places at Boardrooms Best, where you can learn more about that and on all the great things that she's working on. And so, Nancy, thanks for coming out on the show. Appreciate you being here.
And thank you, Tyler. I'm going to add one more thing. That's the work that you do is really, truly amazing. And if anybody wants to get on board, they need to really understand what your expertise is, because that can be such a huge asset to understanding how to position yourself in an environment, especially a social media world, that is so prevalent to getting your name out there that most people don't know about. And you just rock. So.
Oh, well, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. Well, thank you so much. For everyone out there listening, it's your turn to go out and do something.
Thank you for listening to Biz Ninja Entrepreneur Radio with Tyler Jorgensen. Please make sure to subscribe so you're first to hear new interviews and episodes. If you found this podcast to be valuable, please share it with a friend. Don't forget to visit our online dojo at bizninja.com to claim your reward for listening to the show.